Conclusion. To summarize this historical assessment of adult-child sexual interaction, which may be called a history of child abuse, it can be stated that there is scientific consensus that child abuse is a form of violence and also in the case where such violence is inflicted on the victim by sexual means. In both physical abuse and sexual abuse of children, it is the violence which causes child trauma and not the sexual act or activity. By contrast, it is still controversial in the forensic and scientific literature if cases of shared love and sex have equally to be treated under the header of abuse. The public discussion is not divided on the question if violent abuse should be banned as much as possible. Most people today agree that children should not be treated in any violent way, whatever the reason for the infliction of violence may be. But opinions are largely divided when it comes to true love relations between adults and children, where adults try their best to respect the child's will, and where sexual relations are engaged only in case the child explicitly consents. These cases that are not clear-cut and that are not the usual cases that go to court are difficult to judge, and a general judgment here is perhaps not possible, as every case must probably be seen as unique. It, however, appears from the main part of the literature that these cases are rather the exception than the rule. But this may have to do with the simple fact that love relations generally are not reported because the child and even the parents may be convinced that no harm was done and thus did not report the incident. This quite condensed historical survey has shown to which extent sex and violence are interwoven in our society because of a long history of morality and hypocrisy that created a sort of collective schizophrenia where sex is often per se associated with violence. This is, however, not by nature so, and there is no genetic defect within the human setup. This distorted view seems to be the result of a lacking acceptance of human sexuality within a judgmental and ignorant society. There is now quite a lot of evidence suggesting that the steady upsurge of violence in our culture, especially violence perpetrated against infants, children, and adolescents, originates from infant neglect, deprivation of tactile stimulation, the taboo on premarital sex, physical punishment and abuse, and the silence imposed by mainstream culture about voicing issues that touch life, death, and sexuality. It can be said that there is a culturally coined link between sex and violence in our civilization that is at the root of our present value system and the social and legal framework it has brought about. We should begin to focus on the real issues of child trauma, which are the day-to-day emotional neglect and deprivation and rampant emotional abuse of children in the form of parental codependence, manipulation, and physical abuse inflicted upon children by a structurally highly violent social framework. To quote from one of the more recent studies on child abuse, I quote, "Emotional abuse causes the most long-term harm to children, although combinations of emotional with physical and or sexual abuse cause the most harm to long-term mental health." End of quote. Part of the emotional abuse that typically children in Western culture are subjected to on a daily basis is to forcefully destroy their friendships with adult partners. And in so far, we should reflect about the degree of structural violence in a society which denies in origo the child's need for privacy and personal intimacy. From there, it's but a tiny step to reflect about the values of democracy and the fact that not only adults but also children enjoy the freedom democracy grants and that children have the same right of privacy that adults claim for themselves. Morality is a concept that throughout human history brought about violence and confusion, and especially violence against children. The very morality that was established to protect children is clearly, and perhaps paradoxically, a psychological mechanism that in the long run severely damages children's healthy psychosexual growth and psychosomatic well-being and retards or impairs their development into autonomy and self-reliance. Love and sex, not only in Western culture, are forms of behavior that we try to hide and do behind closed doors. This is generally so and not related to specific forms of sex. Even married couples hardly ever expose themselves to their children or adult friends during intercourse. Anthropological studies in sexually more permissive cultures found that these cultures are even stricter than ours regarding the secrecy of love and sex on one hand and the taboo of incest on the other. It is therefore not really astonishing that what we find and can find in written history are the outrageous facts of accidented relations and not the love stories. When we consider this, we can summarize the following facts. Children have been involved in love and sex with adults at least since written history and probably since times immemorial. Children have been subjected to more or less heavy amounts of violence under the reign of patriarchy, which was during the last 5,000 years. Children were considered in all pre-industrial cultures as psychosexually mature around puberty, and actually married at that age and procreated children. Children have a certain sexual arousal level for all adult males, regardless of the usual sexual preferences. Newer studies, not yet included in this book, now corroborate this fact in finding this equally true regarding adult females. Children have served as amused jesters throughout human history, which included free sexual relationships with them during certain festivities, orgies, or celebrations, including religious celebrations, especially among the higher classes of societies or in the royal establishment or pre-industrial societies. Children have served as prostitutes and temporary sexual maids for adults through all of written history. In some pre-industrial cultures, child prostitution was established as temple prostitution, with children serving as freely available prostitutes in temples and during religious ceremonies. Children of noble birth have been held in praise and adoration in aesthetically refined civilizations, and this fact must not be confounded with ordinary child prostitution equally present in those cultures, because both the more noble and the more vulgar forms are different expressions of human love. To repeat it, as the sources generally do not point to much of consenting love relations between individual men or women and children, we cannot conclude from the absence of material in so far that those relations had not existed. To believe this would be a fatal error. When I consider this material as a trained lawyer, I can only apply the principle of concluding de majore ad minor, known in juridical logic. This logic principle states that what is valid for a complex event is certainly also true for an event that is based on the same premises but a lesser complex form of it. If we have thus observed that throughout human history children have been subjected to more or less violent forms of sexual abuse, we can also conclude that children were equally involved in non-violent and loving sexual contacts with adults where they played the role of a replacement love object, or even for a certain time of a real partner for an adult. What this logical conclusion, however, does not allow is to estimate any percentage of children having been involved in nonviolent sexual contacts, and we may never find the answer to this intriguing question because of lacking source material. Some researchers, however, take rather illogical conclusions from the existing historical sources and reason that because there are no or very little explicit reports about nonviolent and consenting sexual relations with children, all and every such erotic relation with a child was per se violent and abusive. It is obvious that this is a logical error, because for relationships among adults, the forensic material is basically in the same form. And what we have got are rape stories that typically go to court, not consenting love relations between men and women. This is simply so because in real love relations, there is little chance that the woman will denounce her lover at the police. While in adult-child relations, there are certainly more factors in play, making these cases more complex socially than adult-adult relations. I cannot see a fundamental difference here that would force a logical conclusion that comes to a total denial of any possibility of an adult-child sexual contact being truly consenting and nonviolent and harmless to the child's safety. And yet, most of the present public discussion of so-called pedophilia is based upon this logical error, and probably for good reason. Taboos have a tendency to enforce themselves against logic and in highly irrational ways, and they distort natural perception of reality, triggering highly distorted reactions from a large number of people. A taboo does not need to be rational to be valid, and this is simply so, as taboos are typically not set up by a rational society or a majority of rational people. History shows with abundant evidence that societies with a high taboo level are generally freedom hostile and undemocratic, if not tyrannical, while societies with a more permissive setup can do with a very basic range of sexual taboos and are generally more democratic as they value personal freedom and trust in the goodness of nature. Further studies should focus on finding a way out of the ideological and propagandistic agendas that hide the transparent and verifiable reality that children simply have a certain sexual arousal level for most adults, as vice versa, adults have a certain arousal level for certain children. And if we deny this, then we are called upon to inquire into the hypothesis that the reason for pedophilic attraction toward children may be codependence. My research on codependence has given me clues for the assumption that when somebody has lived through a highly codependent childhood and was emotionally rather entangled with his or her own parents, the person is later inclined to project that conditioning toward codependence upon children, which has in a certain number of cases the result that the emotional relationship with children becomes eroticized or even sexualized. Hence, an etiological explanation of how pedophilic attraction can come up in adults. Emotionally, nature has created a mutual responsiveness between adults and children. I have not found one researcher who would contest this fact. The question is always why and how such emotional attraction can become eroticized. This phenomenon, however, that has been clearly observed in adults may equally occur with children. When adults seek our children as love and sexual mates, it is comprehensive from a simple point of natural logic that in that case, children too will seek out adult partners as possible love and sexual mates. But that does not mean, as some representatives of the pedophile movement make it believe, that all children would generally opt for adults as love partners if such love was socially accepted. First of all, we have to consider children who had the chance to grow up without codependence and emotional abuse. And here, I believe, children have low or no gerontophilic attraction and thus will mate if let free primarily or exclusively with peers. Children, however, who went through codependent childhoods have a certain gerontophilic arousal level, just as adults have a certain pedophilic arousal level when they experience codependent childhoods. This is a general rule and not invariably so, as adults regularly look for their mates among adults. And children, when left free, naturally have ongoing love and sex relations with peers and also with younger children. But there are exceptions to the rule that always will make out a certain percentage that is impossible to evaluate exactly, and where there is a natural loving attraction between adults and children across all social strata, across all cultures, across all ages, and across all civilizations. But as this is rather a minority of all adults and children, the general fear of legalizing adult-child erotic relations is much of a shadow game. In truth, such legalization would not change much in the real world regarding loving adult-child relations, while it would change a lot regarding violent abuse, if not substantially reduce the occurrence of violent sexual child abuse.